stop it, she said. Stop it. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. Because no one else has given up. If we give up, then we'll be expelled from the Garden of Eden. Why us? Of course, it shouldn't be them either. But someone has to be expelled. The Garden of Eden has a limited capacity. We don't want to leave the garden, so we can't give up. Three pairs of eyes so close to breaking apart locked together again. Infrasonic H-bomb, infrasonic H-bomb, infrasonic H-bomb. Every ship is equipped with them. It's hard to defend against a stealth launch. Their gazes separated temporarily as their minds were pushed to the brink of collapse. They needed rest. When the three pairs of eyes met once again, they were uncertain and erratic, like candles flickering in the wind. Evil, evil, evil. We'll become devils, we'll become devils, we'll become devils. But what are they thinking? Dongfang Yanshu asked softly. To the two vice-captains her voice, while soft, seemed to linger uninterrupted in the white space, like the buzz of a mosquito. Yes, we don't want to become devils, but who knows what they're thinking? Then we're already devils, or how else could we think of them as devils unprovoked? Very well, then we won't think of them as devils. That won't solve the problem, Dongfang Yanshu said with a gentle shake of her head. Yes, even if they aren't devils, the problem remains, because they don't know what we're thinking. Suppose they know that we're not devils. The problem still exists. They don't know what we're thinking about them. They don't know what we're thinking about what they're thinking about us. That carries on in an endless chain of suspicion. They don't know what we're thinking about what they're thinking about what we're thinking about what they're thinking about what we're... How can this chain of suspicion be broken? Communication? On Earth, perhaps, but not in space. Some people must die, or everyone will die. This is the unwinnable dead hand that space has dealt for the survival of Starship Earth. An insurmountable wall. In the face of it, communication has no meaning. Only one choice is left. The question is, who makes that choice? Dark. It's so fucking dark. We can't delay any longer, Dongfang Yanshu said decisively. No more delays. In this dark region of space, the dualists are holding their breath. The string is about to snap. Every second, the danger grows exponentially. Since it's all the same, no matter who pulls it, why not pull it ourselves? Then Akira Inoue suddenly broke the silence. There's another choice. We sacrifice ourselves. Why? Why us? The three of us could, but do we have the authority to make this choice on behalf of the 2,000 people on natural selection?
The three of them were standing on a knife blade. Though its cuts were painful, a jump off either side would be into a bottomless abyss. These were the labor pains for the birth of the new space humans. How about this? Levin said. First, lock in the targets, and then think it over some more. Dongfang Yanshu nodded. Levin called up a control interface for the weapons system in the air and opened up the window for the infrasonic H-bombs and carrier missiles. On a spherical coordinate system with natural selection at the origin, Blue Space, Enterprise, Deep Space, and Ultimate Law were displayed as four points of light 200,000 kilometers away. The distance masked the structure of the targets, for at the scale of space, everything was just a point. But the four points of light were ringed with four red halos, four deathly nooses, indicating that the weapons system had already locked on the targets. Stunned, the three of them looked at each other and shook their heads to say that it wasn't their doing. Apart from them, privileges to place a target lock in the weapons system were also held by the arms control and target screening officers, but their lock placement had to be authorized by the captain or vice-captain. That left just one other person with direct privileges to lock a target and launch an attack.
"We're idiots. He's only someone who's changed history twice. He realized all of this first. Who knows when he realized it? Maybe when Starship Earth was founded, or even earlier, when he learned that the combined fleet had been destroyed. He is the last to show worry, like the parents of his era, always keeping their children in mind."
Dongfang Nianxu flew across the spherical hall as fast as she could, followed closely by the two vice-captains. They went out of the door and down that long corridor until they arrived at the door to Zheng Beihai's cabin. Suspended in front of him was an interface identical to the one they had just seen. They rushed forward, but the scene from Natural Selection's escape replayed itself. They crashed into the bulkhead. There was no door, just an oval-shaped area where the bulkhead was transparent.
"What are you doing?"
Levin shouted. "Children," Zheng Beihai said, the first time he had addressed them this way. Even though his back was turned, they could imagine that his eyes were as calm as water. "Let me do this."
"You mean, if I don't go to hell, who will? Is that it?"
Dongfang Nianxu said in a loud voice. "From the moment I became a soldier, I was prepared to go there if necessary," he said, continuing with the weapons pre-launch operations. From outside, the three of them saw that while he wasn't skilled at these operations, every step he took was correct. Tears welled up in Dongfang Yanshu's eyes, and she cried,
"Let's go together. Let me in. I'll go to hell with you."
He made no answer, but continued his manipulations. He set the guided missiles for manual self-destruct, so that they could be detonated by the mothership while in flight. Only after finishing the last step did he say, "Dongfang, think. Could we have made this choice before? Absolutely not. But now we can make it, because space has turned us into new humans." He set the missile's warheads to explode at a distance of 50 kilometers from each target. This would avoid causing the targets any internal damage, but an even greater distance would still be within the fatal range for any life aboard the targets. "The birth of a new civilization is the formation of a new morality." He removed the first safety lock on the H-bomb warheads. "When they look back in the future on everything we've done, it may seem entirely normal. So we won't go to hell, children." The second safety lock was removed. Suddenly, the alert sounded throughout the ship like the crying of 10,000 ghosts in the darkness of space. Display interfaces popped up in mid-air like snowflakes, showing a huge quantity of information that Natural Selection's defense systems had received about the incoming missiles, but no one had time to read it. There was a space of just 4 seconds from the sounding of the alert to the detonation of the infrasonic H-bombs. Images transmitted back to Earth from Natural Selection showed that Zheng Beihai may have understood all of this in just 1 second. He had imagined that his heart had grown as hard as iron through the arduous procession of more than 2 centuries, but he had overlooked something hidden in the deepest part of his soul, and he had hesitated before making the final decision. He tried to restrain the trembling of his heart, and it was that last moment's softness that killed him and everyone on board Natural Selection. After the month-long face-off in the darkness, he was just a few seconds slower than the other ship was. 3 small suns lit up the blackness of space, forming an equilateral triangle with Natural Selection at the centre, at an average distance of 40 kilometres. The fusion fireball lasted for 20 seconds and sparkled with infrasonic frequencies that were invisible to the naked eye. The returned images showed that in the last 3 seconds that remained, Zheng Beihai turned to Dongfang Yanshu, flashed her a smile, and spoke. "It doesn't matter. It's all the same. The exact words were only a guess, because he didn't have time to finish before a powerful electromagnetic pulse arrived from three directions, vibrating Natural Selection's enormous hull like a cicada's wings. The energy in these vibrations was converted to infrasonic waves, which, in the image, looked like a fog of blood that enveloped everything. The attack had come from Ultimate Law, which had fired 12 cloaked missiles armed with infrasonic H-bombs at the four other ships. The three missiles fired at Natural Selection, which was 200,000 kilometers away, had been launched before the others so that the ones fired at its three neighboring ships would reach their detonation points at the same time. A vice captain had taken over after the suicide of Ultimate Law's captain, but it was unknown who ultimately made the decision to launch the attack, and it would never be known. Ultimate Law was not one of the lucky ones remaining in the Garden of Eden at the end. Of the three other pursuing ships, Blue Space had been the best prepared against unexpected incidents. Before it was attacked, it had turned its interior into a vacuum and put all personnel in spacesuits. Because infrasonic waves were impossible in a vacuum, no personnel were injured, and the body of the ship suffered only minimal damage from the electromagnetic pulse. Right after the nuclear fireballs exploded, Blue Space began its counterattack with lasers, the fastest response possible. It lit up Ultimate Law with 5 gamma-ray laser beams and burned 5 huge holes in its hull. Its insides quickly caught fire, and there were minor explosions, causing the ship to lose all combat capability. Harsher attacks from Blue Space followed, and under continuous attack by nuclear missiles and a rain of railgun fire, Ultimate Law exploded violently, leaving no survivors. At almost the same time as Starship Earth's Battle of Darkness was going on, a similar tragedy was taking place far on the other side of the solar system. Bronze Age launched a sudden strike on Quantum, using the same infrasonic H-bombs to kill off all life inside its target, but preserving the target ship whole. Because the two ships had sent only minimal information back to Earth, no one knew exactly what had taken place between them. They had both gone into intense acceleration to escape from the probe attack, but they had not decelerated like Natural Selection's pursuers had, so their remaining fuel ought to have been more than enough to return to Earth. The boundlessness of space nurtured a dark new humanity in its dark embrace. In the expanding metal cloud formed from the explosion of Ultimate Law, Blue Space rendezvoused with Enterprise and Deep Space, neither of which showed signs of life, and collected all of their fusion fuel. After stripping them of their hardware, Blue Space flew the 200,000 kilometers to Natural Selection, and did the same to that ship. Starship Earth was like a construction site in space now, the massive hulls of the three dead ships dotted with the sparks of laser welding. If Zheng Beihai had still been alive, the scene would certainly have reminded him of the aircraft carrier Tang 2 centuries before. Blue Space took pieces of the three derelict warships and set them up in a Stonehenge formation, forming a tomb in outer space. There they held a funeral for all the victims of the Battle of Darkness. Wearing spacesuits, the 1,273 crew members of Blue Space assembled in a floating formation at the centre of the tomb. These were the remaining citizens of Starship Earth. Around them, huge pieces of spaceships towered like a ring of mountains, the gashes cut into the wreckage like enormous mountain caves. The bodies of 4,247 victims remained within this debris, which cast its shadows over all of the living, as if they were a mountain valley at midnight. The only light was the iciness of the Milky Way, where it shone through the gaps between the wreckage. Moods remained calm during the funeral. The new space humans had passed through their infancy. A small votive lamp was lit. It was a 50-watt bulb with 100 spare bulbs next to it that would be automatically substituted in the lamp. Powered by a small nuclear battery, the votary lamp could remain continuously lit for tens of thousands of years. Its dim light was like a candle in the mountain valley, casting a small halo onto the high cliff of the wreckage and shining on a piece of titanium bulkhead engraved with the names of the victims. There was no epitaph. 1 hour later, the space tomb was illuminated one final time by the light of Blue Space's acceleration. The tomb was travelling at 1% of the speed of light. In several hundred years, it would decelerate to 0.03% of light speed due to the drag from interstellar dust clouds. It would still reach NH558J2 in 60,000 years, but Blue Space would already have headed off toward its next star system more than 50,000 years before that. Blue Space travelled deep into space, carrying plenty of fusion fuel and an 8-fold redundant supply of critical parts. There was so much material, it was impossible to fit it all inside the craft, so several external storage compartments were attached to the hull, completely altering the ship's appearance and turning it into an enormous, ugly, irregular body. Indeed, it looked like a traveller on a long journey. The previous year, on the opposite side of the solar system, Bronze Age had accelerated away from the ruins of Quantum in the direction of Taurus. Blue Space and Quantum had come from a world of light, but they had become two ships of darkness. The universe had once been bright too. For a short time after the Big Bang, all matter existed in the form of light, and only after the universe turned to burnt ash did heavier elements precipitate out of the darkness and form planets and life. Darkness was the mother of life and of civilization. On Earth, an avalanche of curses and abuse rolled out into space toward Blue Space and Bronze Age, but the two ships made no reply. They cut off all contact with the solar system, for to those two worlds, the Earth was already dead. The two dark ships became one with the darkness, separated by the solar system and drifting further apart, carrying with them the entirety of human thoughts and memories, and embracing all of the Earth's glory and dreams, they quietly disappeared into the eternal night.
"I knew it!"
That was the first thing Luoji said upon learning about the battle of darkness that had taken place at the edges of the solar system. Leaving behind a baffled Shi Qiang, he ran out of the room and raced through the neighbourhood until he stood facing the northern China desert.
"I was right! I was right!"
he shouted at the sky. It was late at night, and perhaps because of the rain that had just fallen, atmospheric visibility was excellent. The stars were visible, although they weren't nearly as clear as in the 21st century, and they were far sparser than before, since only the brightest could be seen. Yet he still swelled with that feeling he had on that cold night on the frozen lake 2 centuries ago. Luoji, the ordinary person, had disappeared, and he became a wall-facer once again.
"Dasha, I have in my hands the key to human victory," he said to Shi Qiang, who had followed after him.
Shi Qiang laughed.
"Ho!"
Shi Qiang's slightly mocking laughter dashed Luoji's excitement. "I knew you wouldn't believe me."
"So what will you do now?" Shi Qiang asked.
Luoji sat down on the sand, and his mood crashed rapidly. "What should I do?
It looks like there's nothing I can do.
You could at least find a way to report it upstairs.
I don't know if that would work, but I'll give it a try, even if it's just to fulfil my responsibility.
How high up will you go?
The highest, the UN Secretary-General, or the chair of the SFJC.
That won't be easy, I'm afraid. We're just ordinary people now. Still, you've got to try. You can go to the city government first. Find the mayor.
Very well. I'll go to the city then. He stood up.
I'll go with you.
No, I'll go alone.
Even at this rank, I'm still an official. I'll have an easier time meeting the mayor.
Luo Ji looked up at the sky and asked,
When does the droplet reach Earth?
The news said it'll arrive in 10 or 20 hours.
Do you know what it's coming to do?
Its mission wasn't to destroy the combined fleet, nor was it to attack the Earth. It's here to kill me.
I don't want you to be with me when it does.
Che Chiang laughed the same mocking laugh again.
There's still 10 hours, right? By that time, I'll just stay farther away from you.
Luo Ji shook his head with a wry smile. You're not taking me seriously at all, so why do you want to help me?
My boy, it's up to the top whether they believe you or not. I always play things safe. If you were selected out of billions of people 2 centuries ago, there's got to be a reason, right? If I delay you here, then won't I be condemned by the ages? If the higher-ups don't take you seriously, I won't have lost anything. It's just a trip into the city. But there's one thing. You say that the thing that's flying toward Earth is coming to kill you. I don't believe that at all. I'm well acquainted with killing, and that's excessive, even for Trisolarans.
They reached the passage from the old city to the underground city in the early hours of morning, and saw that the elevators going down were still functioning normally. Lots of people were coming out carrying large quantities of luggage. Few were going down, however, and on their elevator there were only 2 other people.
Are you hibernators?
They're all going up top. Why are you going down?
The city's in chaos, one of them, a young man, said. On his clothes, fireballs shone continuously against a black background. A closer look revealed that it was an image of the destruction of the combined fleet.
Then what are you going down for? Che Chiang asked.
I've found a place to live on the surface, so I'm going down to get a few things, he said. Then he nodded at them.
You on the surface are going to get rich. We don't have any houses there, and the property rights to the surface houses are mostly in your hands. We'll have to buy them off you.
If the underground city collapses and all those people rush to the surface, there's probably not going to be any actual buying or selling, Che Chiang said.
A middle-aged man huddling in a corner of the elevator was listening to them, and he suddenly covered his face with his hands and let out a whine.
No, oh.
Then he squatted down and started crying. His clothing showed a classical biblical scene, a naked Adam and Eve standing beneath a tree in the Garden of Eden as a bewitching snake crawled between them. It may have been a symbol for the recent Battle of Darkness.
There are lots of people like him, the young man said, pointing disdainfully at the weeping man, unsound of mind. His eyes lit up.
Actually, Doomsday is a wonderful time, the most wonderful time even. This is the only time in history where there's a chance for people to abandon all of their cares and burdens and belong entirely to themselves. It's stupid to be like him. The most responsible way of life right now is to enjoy ourselves while we can.
When the elevator reached the bottom, Luo Ji and Che Chiang exited the hall and immediately smelled the strong, strange odour of something burning. The underground city was brighter than before, but it was an irritating white light. Looking around, what Luo Ji saw through the gaps in the huge trees wasn't the blue sky, but a total blank. The projection of the sky on the vault of the underground city had vanished. The blankness reminded him of spherical spaceship cabins he had seen on the news. The lawns were littered with a mass of debris that had fallen from the huge trees. Not far off was the wreckage of several crashed flying cars, one of which was in flames and surrounded by a crowd of people who were picking up other combustibles from the lawn and throwing them into the flames. Someone even threw in his own clothing while it was still flashing images. A ruptured underground pipe sprayed a high column of water, drenching a group of people who played around in it like children. From time to time they would scream excitedly in unison and scatter to avoid debris falling from the trees, then they would regroup and continue their revels. Luo Ji looked up again and saw fires in several places on the trees. The sirens of flying firefighting vehicles screamed as they flew through the air, dangling plucked tree leaves that had caught fire. He noticed that the people they met on the streets fell into two types, much like the two people they had encountered on the elevator. One type was depressed, walking with dull eyes or simply sitting on the lawns enduring the torment of despair, a despair whose cause had now shifted from humanity's defeat to the present difficult living conditions. The other type was in a state of crazed excitement and grew intoxicated from indulgence. Traffic in the city was in chaos. It took Luo Ji and Shi Qiang half an hour to hail a taxi, and when the driverless flying car that carried them passed through the huge trees, Luo Ji was reminded of his first horrific day in the city and felt the tension of riding a roller coaster. Fortunately, the car soon arrived at City Hall. Shi Qiang had been here several times because of work and was fairly familiar with the place. After a considerable number of steps, they finally received permission to meet the mayor, but they had to wait until the afternoon. Luo Ji had expected complications, so the mayor's acceptance of the meeting caught him by surprise, since this was an extraordinary time, and they were little people. At lunch, Shi Qiang told Luo Ji that the mayor had taken office the day before. He used to be the official in charge of hibernator affairs in the city government and was, in a way, Shi Qiang's superior, so he knew him fairly well.
"He's one of our countrymen," Shi Qiang said.
In this age, the meaning of the term countryman had shifted from geography to temporality. But it wasn't used between all hibernators. Only those who had entered hibernation at roughly the same time counted as countrymen. When they got together across the long years, temporally based countrymen shared an even closer affinity than geographically based countrymen used to. They waited until 4:30 to see the mayor. High-ranking officials in this age typically possessed a star quality, with only the most attractive getting elected. But the current mayor was plain. He was about Shi Qiang's age, but far thinner, and he had one trait that made him identifiable as a hibernator at a glance. He wore glasses. They were definitely antiques from 2 centuries ago, because even contact lenses had long since disappeared. But people who used to wear glasses tended to feel that something was wrong with their appearance when they didn't wear them, so lots of hibernators wore them even after their vision was repaired. The mayor looked utterly exhausted and seemed to have difficulty rising from his chair. When Shi Qiang apologized for the interruption and congratulated him on his promotion, he shook his head.
"These are vulnerable times. Us rugged savages come in handy again." "You're the highest-ranking hibernator on Earth, right?
Who knows? As the situation develops, we might have countrymen promoted to even higher positions."
"And the former mayor? Mental breakdown?"
No, no, there are strong people in this age too. He was very competent, but he was killed in a car crash in a riot area 2 days ago.
The mayor noticed Luo Ji behind Shi Qiang and immediately extended a hand.
Oh, Dr. Luo, hello. Of course I recognize you. I worshipped you 2 centuries ago because out of those 4 people, you seemed most like a wall facer. I really couldn't figure out what you wanted to do.
But their hearts sank at the next thing he said.
You're the 4th messiah I've received in the past 2 days, and there are dozens more waiting outside who I don't have the energy to see.
Mayor, he's not like them. 2 centuries ago,
of course, 2 centuries ago he was selected from billions of people, and it's for that reason that I decided to see you.
The mayor pointed at Shi Qiang.
There's something else I need you for, but we'll talk about that afterward. First, let's talk about what you've got. But I have a small request. Can you not talk about your plans to save the world? They're always so long. First, just tell me what you need me to do.
After Luo Ji and Shi Qiang explained what they wanted, the mayor immediately shook his head.
Even if I wanted to help, I couldn't. I've got piles of stuff of my own I need to report to the senior leadership. But that level's lower than you imagine. It's just provincial and national leaders. It's hard for everyone. You ought to know that the senior leadership is handling even bigger problems right now.
Luo Ji and Shi Qiang had been paying attention to the news, so naturally they knew about the bigger problems that the mayor referred to. The annihilation of the combined fleet saw the swift resurrection of escapism after 2 centuries of silence. The European Commonwealth had even drafted a plan to select 100,000 candidates for departure through a nationwide drawing, and the plan had been passed by a popular vote. But after the results of the drawing, the majority of those who had not been picked were furious, leading to widespread rioting. The public turned unanimously to escapism as crime against humanity. After the Battle of Darkness erupted between the surviving warships in outer space, accusations of escapism gained new meaning. Recent events had proved that when the spiritual bonds with Earth were snapped, people in space suffered a total spiritual alienation. So even if escape were successful, what survived would no longer be human civilization, but some other dark and evil thing. And like Trisolaris, that thing would be the antithesis of human civilization and an enemy of it. It had even been given a name, Neger-civilization. As the droplet came closer to Earth, the public's sensitivity to escapism reached a peak. The media warned it was highly likely that someone would attempt to escape before the droplet's attack. Crowds flocked to the vicinity of the spaceports and the base points of the space elevators with the intent of cutting off all channels into space. They did indeed possess that ability. In this age, the citizens of the world all had the freedom to own weapons, and most of them had small laser guns. Of course, a laser pistol posed no threat to the cabin of the space elevator or the launching spacecraft, but unlike a traditional gun, a large number of lasers could focus their light on a single point. If 10,000 laser pistols fired at one point at the same time, they were unstoppable. Crowds, numbering in at least the tens of thousands, with up to 1 million people in places, gathered around the base points and launching sites, and at least 1/3 were carrying weapons. When they saw a cabin ascend or a spacecraft launch, they would fire their weapons simultaneously. The straight path of the laser beam made aiming incredibly precise, so most of the beams would focus on the target and destroy it. In this way, Earth's transport links with space were almost entirely severed. The chaos grew worse. Over the past couple of days, the target of the attacks had shifted to space cities in synchronous orbit. Rumours flew thick online that certain cities had been converted into escape ships, so they too became subject to attack by the people of Earth. owing to the vast distance, laser beams dissipated and were weakened by the time they reached targets in space, and given the additional factor of the space city's rotation, no material injury was caused. But the activity became a kind of collective entertainment for humanity in those last days. That afternoon, the European Commonwealth's third space city, New Paris, had been subject to simultaneous irradiation by 10 million laser beams from the northern hemisphere, causing the temperature in the city to rise sharply and prompting the evacuation of its residents. From the space city, the Earth had been brighter than the sun. There was nothing more for Luo Ji and Shi Chang to say. "I was really impressed with your work at the Hibernation Immigration Bureau," the mayor said to Shi Chang. "And Guo Zhengming, you know him, right? He was just promoted to director of the Public Security Bureau, and he recommended you to me. I hope you'll come work at the city government. We need people like you right now." Shi Chang thought for a moment and then nodded.
"Once I've settled things in my neighbourhood... How's the situation in the city right now?"
"The situation is deteriorating, but it's still under control. Right now the focus is on maintaining the operation of the induction field power supply. Once that goes, the city will collapse completely."
"These riots are different from those in our day."
"Yeah, they are. First, their source is different. They're sparked by total despair for the future and are incredibly hard to handle. At the same time, we have fewer means at our disposal than in those days." As the mayor was speaking, he pulled up an image on the wall. "This is the central plaza from a height of 100 meters. The central plaza was where Luo Ji and Shi Chang had taken refuge from the flying car. From this vantage point, the Great Ravine Memorial and its surrounding patch of desert couldn't be seen. The entire plaza was white, with white dots crawling around like rice in a pot of porridge. "Are those people?" Luo Ji asked in wonder.
"Naked people. It's a tremendous sex party, with more than 100,000 people, and it's still growing."
Acceptance of heterosexual and homosexual relations in this era was far beyond anything Luo Ji had imagined, and some things were no longer considered remarkable. Still, the sight before them came as a shock to both of them. Luo Ji was reminded of the dissolute scene in the Bible before humanity received the Ten Commandments, a classic doomsday scenario.
"Why doesn't the government put a stop to it?" Shi Chang asked sharply.
"How would we stop it? They're completely within the law. If we take action, the government would be the one committing a crime." Shi Chang let out a long sigh.
"Yes, I know. In this age, police and the military can't do much," the mayor said.
"We've been through the law, and we haven't found any provisions for coping with the present situation."
"With a city like this, it would be better if the droplets smashed it apart."
Shi Chang's words jerked Luo Ji awake. He asked hurriedly, "How long until the droplet gets to Earth?" The mayor replaced the image of spectacular promiscuity with a breaking news channel showing a simulation of the solar system. The eye-catching red line that marked the path of the droplet looked like the orbit of a comet, except that it terminated close to the Earth. In the lower right was a countdown clock indicating that if the droplet didn't reduce speed, it would reach Earth in 4 hours and 54 minutes. The news crawl was now displaying an expert analysis of the droplet. Despite the terror gripping the world, the scientific community had recovered its senses after the initial shock of defeat, so the analysis was calm and sober. Though humanity knew absolutely nothing about the droplet's energy source and drive mechanism, the analyst felt that it had run into a power consumption problem, because its acceleration toward the sun after destroying the combined fleet had been particularly sluggish. It had passed close by Jupiter, but, ignoring the three warships at the base, used the planet's gravity to accelerate, a move that further demonstrated that the droplet's energy was limited to the point of exhaustion. Scientists believe that the notion that the droplet would crash into Earth was utter nonsense, but they had no idea what it actually had come to do. Luo Ji said, "I have to leave, or else the city will really be destroyed." "Why?" the mayor asked.
"Because he thinks the droplet wants to kill him," Shi Qiang said.
The mayor laughed, but his smile was stiff. Apparently he hadn't laughed in a long time.
"Dr. Luo, you're the most self-absorbed person I've ever met."